name is Cindy Goodman Lee. This is the National Council of Jewish Women Oral History 2 project. It's February 8th, 1996, and I'm here with Frida Silberman. Frida, could you just say hello so we can check the centimeters?
Hello, nice to have you here. I'm Frida Silberman.
Hey, Frida, we're going to start with some questions that help us clarify some of the information from the last interview. First of all, could you tell us the spelling of your grandfather's name, Solomon? How Solomon was spelled?
S-O-L-O-M-O-N. Coven, K-O-V-E-N.
Okay. Could you spell Sidney's name, your brother Sidney?
S-I-D-N-E-Y.
Okay. In the last interview, you indicated that Arnold was born 77 years ago, and I just wanted to double check if you know what year that was.
Yes, it was 1919.
Also, if you can recall, you mentioned that one or both of your brothers was disruptive in school. I'm not sure. It was a little unclear. And the principal...
Yeah, that was my older brother. And because I followed him in school, I had a bad reputation because of him. Guilt by association, they used to call it.
That was your brother Arnold?
Arnold, that was Arnold. And I think I also said he straightened out afterwards.
Yes,
he's fine.
Say that.
He's just fine.
You see, that was a good citizen after that. The last clarification question that I have is that you indicated that one of your brothers was born in a bad time of life. I believe it was the year that your grandmother died. Was that?
That's right. That was Sydney in 1929. And that was just a month before the October crash, as they called it, the Wall Street debacle. And times were bad after that, very bad. You're too young to know.
Before we start with some new questions, was there anything that you thought of after we turned off the tape or in the week that's passed that you wanted to add from what you shared with us last week?
I think I had a few thoughts, but I didn't write them down, so now I don't know what they were.
Excuse me. There were a couple more clarifications, if you don't mind. First
sure.
of all, I'm not sure. I do remember Schrafts, but I want you to clarify the spelling.
All right, yes. S-C-H-R-A-F-F-T.
Thank you.
It was a restaurant that was quite well known all over the city and many branches, but this was Times Square.
Also, you mentioned you'd moved to Washington, D.C. You didn't say anything about where you lived there.
Well, I lived with a family. I didn't live in my own apartment. I had a room with a family who offered to rent space because the government needed whatever space there was. And their daughter had gone off to work for another government agency. And so they were happy enough to have a female occupying her room. And I had my meals with them. And it was one of those patriotic things that people were doing.
Do you recall what neighborhood the home was?
Yeah, it was Georgia Avenue. And it was a residential neighborhood. It was in the city, not that far up. It's now not a very nice neighborhood. But it was quite pleasant.
You'd also mentioned that you have a libretto that was right near the end, and I wasn't sure for what.
The operas that my parents went to before they were married. That was one of the things that they did as their entertainment.
Thank you.
They're from the teens, from 14, 15, 16, that era.
How many of them do you have?
Oh, I don't know.
A lot of them.
There are quite a few, yeah.
Do you know where the performances were?
Oh, all at the Metropolitan Opera. The old one, not the one that came much later. The original.
Okay, I'm going to start with asking you about Aaron's educational background and training, and you started to talk about that at the end of the last interview.
All right, well, it's hearsay because I didn't know him then, but he did go to grammar school in Brooklyn. I think it was Williamsburg section. And then later on, the family moved to what's now called Brooklyn Heights, I think. I'm not real sure of what the section was called. But then they moved a few times. And then later on, he went to a high school called Alexander Hamilton. And it was an all-boys school. And I'm not sure why he chose it, but I do think it was considered one of the better schools scholastically. And after that, I did start to tell you about going to his freshman year at NYU, New York University. But because it was expensive, which was $10 a credit, and he couldn't afford it, he didn't stay more than either a semester or a full year, I don't really remember. And he transferred to CCNY, City College of New York, now known as CUNY, C-U-N-Y, City University of New York. And the reason he went to City College is that it was totally free. And it was really the only way he could get his education. And I'm not sure if I told you, he made it in 8 years, at night, strictly at night, and he worked during the day as an accountant.
Was he working at a firm?
Well, a various variety of businesses, small businesses, and actually later on he was with an accounting firm. But all of those jobs were far from where he went to school and far from where he lived, so he spent a good bit of time hanging onto a strap in a subway and going from Brooklyn to the Bronx to Manhattan at night and just putting in a long, hard day. But he was determined.
I'm not sure if we have on tape what you said about your husband's support for Baruch College.
Well, yes, I think we may have talked about it. His support came many years later when he began to make a little money and decided that best place to put it is back at the school where he felt that they had done so much for helping him get his education and for the fact that they have supported a lot of young students who would never have had an education otherwise. And he felt it was time to give back a little to the school, and he gave a lot by instituting a music program, a recital series. And it's something that never existed before at his school. It was a business college, part of it that he went to. The liberal arts and the pre-med and pre-everything else is in another area of the city, uptown New York. He was downtown. And the downtown school was strictly business education. And it is now a liberal arts, full liberal arts program. But when he went there, there was no such thing as a music program. And so he felt it was lacking and decided he would do something about that. So what he did was established an endowment fund, and he settled on four programs a year, recitals, plus the Alexander String Quartet, who are in residence twice a year. And they spend 4 days, they go to the various classrooms, and the final day is a recital, but during the other 4 days, they lecture in various classrooms, depending on what the subject is, if it's English, if it's literature, if it's history, if it's math or architecture. They will relate the music that they're going to play at their program to whatever the subject is. And if it's an era of, say, Elizabethan history, they will play music from that era. Or they will describe music relating to architecture, the arches, for instance, or the mathematics of the music. And they'll, as I say, relate it to whatever the subject is at hand. And the students who are mostly, yes, mostly poor, because that's why they are there, they can't afford anything else, but they're also very bright. They have to pass certain state requirements in order to go there. And they're interested in everything, and most of these students have never been to a live concert and never had occasion to talk directly to a musician, to look at an instrument. They've never seen a cello, probably. And so it's all very carefully and interestingly explained to them. And they have now gone to concerts at St. John's Church, where the quartet plays. They're very enthused. And the little hall that they have is packed. I've been there whenever the programs come on, and they sit on the floor, they sit in the hall, they're just all over the place because the room isn't big enough, but there's such an interest that it has really become something very special there.
How long ago did the support start for this kind of program?
Probably 12 years ago. Yeah. And so I'm pursuing it with the head of the music department by choosing the musicians who are brought in for the other recitals as the balance of the series. And we try to bring a variety of instrumentalists, and the quartet is, of course, established now. We've had trios, we've had duos, we've had solos, piano, violin. We had 1 year, I guess it's about 3 years ago, a jazz program. And for that we had to use the main auditorium, and we had about 1,200 people there. And they were also standing in the aisles. There was so much demand for it. And that was, thank goodness, Aaron was there to hear that, and it was very special.
What was Aaron doing when you met him? What kind of work was he doing at the time you met him?
When I met him, he was working for the Navy Department at a place in Jersey City, Cavens Point. I think it was a naval repair base or something, but he was working as an accountant.
Can you tell us about your first home there? Where it was located, what the neighborhood was like?
Well, we lived with my parents in an apartment when Aaron came back from the Army. We had not been married when he went into the Army. And so when he came back, he moved in with us because I was there with our first child. And we spent 1 year with my parents. And then finally, he had enough income to pay for rent on our own, and we had an apartment in Ridgefield, New Jersey. And we were there about a year. And then he was offered this job in Pittsburgh. Well, in Pittsburgh area, McKeesport. And so we moved to an apartment in McKeesport. Then
Where was the apartment? Oh, do you remember the street name?
Oh, yeah. 716 Edmondson. Edmondson. It was on a hill surrounded by sheep and cows. And this converted small schoolhouse that had six apartments. It was in Port View, PORTVUE, as I recall, which was a suburb of McKeesport.
Excuse me, was it Ridgeville or
Ridgefield? Ridgefield, F-I-E-L-D. Have you got it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And Port View, we were in that apartment, I guess, for 3 years. And then we did buy a house in Squirrelville in Pittsburgh on Covode, C-O-V-O-D-E, Covode Street. And that was our first experience of being homeowners. We had grown up in apartments, and it was a very new experience.
What year did you move to McKeesport?
1948, September 1948.
And how long, just going back to when you were still in the New York area, you said your husband, you had already had your first child when your husband came out of the military. Could you tell me the time frame, what year you were married, and then when he came out of the military?
We were married in February 1944. And Renee was born the end of February 1945. He was in the Army all that time. I was with him for a number of months in Oregon and in California before I came back and before he went overseas. So when he saw his daughter for the first time, she was 11 months old. And did she cry? She didn't know who this strange man was. She was so used to my father and my brothers as being the only men around. Who was this person?
Could you spell Renee's name?
R-E-N-E-E. Yeah, you would know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Where was your husband when he was abroad?
In various places. New Guinea. The other place, New Guinea. I can't think of it. But he remained in the South Pacific, and eventually went to Manila, the Philippines, with his clarinet.
Can you tell us more about his interest in music, his personal ability to play?
Yeah. When he was in high school, he decided he wanted to be in the band, the marching band. And so there was a need for bassoonists and oboists and clarinetists, and he chose the clarinet. And he studied with the band master and evidently was good enough to be recommended to go further with a more professional teacher in New York. And his interest developed over the years, and when he was, I guess, about 18 and accomplished already, he was accepted into the Simeon, S-I-M-E-O-N, Bellison, B-E-L-L-I-S-O-N, clarinet choir. If there's a mistake in the title, I can look it up and correct it. It was a group of all high school students, and Simeon Bellison was the principal clarinetist with the New York Philharmonic at the time, and he took all these young people under his wing. And they had this wonderful, huge group, and they performed publicly. So Aaron studied with Mr. Bellison for a while, and then he went back to a private teacher because Mr. Bellison had to give up after orchestra disbanded. But it was very prestigious. And his interest continued to develop, and that's one of the things that he always felt that there should be a way to help young people have access to lessons, either inexpensively or on scholarships. And he felt that music was a savior for a lot of his problems and for other young people who needed an outlet. It was always something he wanted to provide.
Did he pursue music as a profession?
Yes, he did for a while. He had his own little jazz band, and they did gigs, as they're called, and he did summer, he had a group who played in the Catskill Mountains at the hotels, and every year was, I guess, a different hotel, but it was something that he just loved to do, so he was versatile. He played classical music and jazz.
What was the name of the band?
Who knows? I don't think it had a name. I think the name depended on what hotel you were at. If it was the Oliveria, the Oliveria Country Club, that name was on the drum. So they, wherever they went, they adopted a new name. But they played at weddings and bar mitzvahs, you know, the usual. And they were good. Everybody went on to become a professional of some sort, but all of them retained their interest in music. And there's one fellow who I'm still in touch with who is an attorney, but he's principal violinist, concertmaster of the Westchester Symphony. So they've all kept up with it.
And Aaron continued playing through?
Oh, he continued to play all his life. When later on, when we did move to Pittsburgh, he found himself a teacher here and eventually studied with the principal clarinetist of the symphony and never gave it up. Until a few months before he died, where his fingers just couldn't maneuver anymore. But I think that was the worst that happened, when he couldn't play anymore. But he still went to programs, listened to music constantly, kept his interest alive.
When you moved to McKeesport or Port View, what kind of job did Aaron have, and what company was it for?
It was a small, family-run scrap iron business, scrap metal business. So it was totally out of his line of work. He wasn't as an accountant at all there. He was hired to be a salesman. So he had to learn how to sell scrap iron. And it was difficult to relate to that kind of work, and he was not terribly happy. But eventually, well, he did leave that job and went to a similar type of company in Pittsburgh, the Berkman organization, Berkman, and he stayed with them for, I don't know, maybe 6 years, and then went into his own business, which was his dream.
What was the name of the first company, the Pittsburgh area company in McKeesport?
Oh, I think it just went under the family name, the Kozlov, C-O-S-L-O-V. Yeah. And then the Berkman company was called Steel Trading.
Berkman Steel Trading?
Pardon me?
Berkman Steel Trading?
Yeah, no, just steel trading, but it was Mr. Berkman who was the director.
What was your first impression of McKeesport?
Dismal. Hilly. Dirty. Depressing because For me, it was being far from home. And while we got to know people in our building quickly, it was a close-knit family kind of a town where came the weekend, everybody went to the family, and we were just there. And my daughter, who was then three, yeah, was very unhappy because all these other kids in the building were going to see their grandparents on the weekend, and her grandma and grandpa were in New Jersey. So we made a lot of trips back. I can tell you that it was important to keep the family connection where we saw each other as often as we could. But eventually, once we realized that Pittsburgh was going to be our home, we decided to move into the city, and then by then Renee was six and started school here. But by then we had gotten to know lots of people in the music world here, in the symphony and schools. It made life very bearable. It was really nice. We had a good life here, which also brought us to realize that we had to give back to the city because it has been a good city for us. And Aaron's philanthropy became quite well known around, not just musical events, but social. Be a better word. How would I describe it? Civic pride, I guess, where he did lots of things for the community, for the colleges, for the students. In so many different ways, I really can't enumerate them all. And he was very socially conscious.
Can you tell us about your home in Squirrel Hill?
Oh, it was cute. It was little, and it was at a dead end of the street, and the kids had a great time. There were lots of children in the area, and it was a very modest house, but I had room for my family to visit and Aaron's family to visit. We squeezed a lot of people in that house and had lots of good times. And then much later in 62, we bought a larger house on Beechwood. And that worked out so nicely because then the kids could spread their wings a bit, you know, have all their friends to come to their get-togethers. And it was a very busy place.
Excuse me, what year was Stephen born?
Stephen was born in McKeesport in 1949, October 1949. Yes. During the very worst weather conditions that affected the area, it was the first known smog inversion. And that was, a combination of smoke and fog. And it hung over the area, all up and down the Monongahela River, where people just couldn't breathe. It was a term created just because of this condition. The word smog had never been known before, but people just couldn't breathe, and they were just dropping. You know, people just couldn't even go out. But we went out to have a baby. Couldn't see out the window of the car. It was the worst experience, trying to get down the hill without killing yourself. We went into fire hydrants, we went into trees, we went into curbs. We didn't hit anybody, but we did have a hard time getting downtown to the hospital. It's unbelievable.
Where was your son born?
McKeesport Hospital. The doctor was standing on the steps in his pajamas waiting for us. It was quite an experience.
You had mentioned in the last interview that your father had some Pittsburgh ties. Was
mm-hmm.
your father who had worked in Pittsburgh with some jewelry stores?
Yes.
And I was wondering if you recalled any of the names which you suggested might still be family businesses.
Yeah, I'm not sure now that it'll just come to me. But there were names that I knew. If I think of them, can you insert them later on?
Yeah, that's fine. I was just wondering if the ties that your father had made, if there was any connection between those ties and your family when you moved to Pittsburgh.
There was one friend, yes, who's now gone, and his name was Oscar Robbins and his wife Bertha. Everybody of that generation is gone, and there was another couple